Thanks so much for tuning in to the Backstretch podcast. I'm Zoe Cavan, joined as always by Mr. Jeffrey Siegel. And Jeff, we've kicked off the new year. We're even into week number two of 2020.
It is. By the way, I'm glad you brought that up because I was driving to the work today and I saw on the side where the trash is being picked up a Christmas tree.
Oh, okay.
And here's this Christmas tree who's been in someone's house for like 2 months, you know, and just laying on the sidewalk ready to be picked up and thrown away. And that was sad to me for two reasons. Number one, it means that the season is over officially. But I felt bad about the poor tree, you know, because, look, I live up on the hills in Bradbury. I've got a backyard that's literally a forest. And I said, hey, don't throw the tree away. Plant it in my backyard or something. Do something. It's kind of depressing a little bit to realize the holiday season is now officially over. Do you feel that way?
Welcome, everybody. This is Jeff Siegel. He is going for president right now. And you know what? That's why I buy a fake tree. That's why I have a fake tree. I don't like killing trees. A lot of these places nowadays will plant one in place of the one they chop down. So if you're going to go buy a tree, you can buy one from a specific place where they will plant one and chop one down for you. Or just buy one in a pot and replant it.
I guess because, you know, I don't know. It was just like, I didn't like
it. So that's a happy talk.
I know, that's
Jeff
a happy
Siegel
talk.
Feeling sorry for
I'm
Christmas
just,
trees.
Right, exactly. And then,
you're Jewish, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I don't care. I mean, I still like trees.
Well, yeah, of course you like trees.
Okay.
All right, so happy talk is
we
over.
We used to have
Jeff
a Hanukkah
Siegel.
Bush, by the way, which was our version of a Christmas tree.
Really?
Really?
Did you replant it or did you chop it down?
I don't even remember. You know, I was like 8 years old or something. And I said, that's nice. We had to be like the rest of the world, apparently. So we had our little bush there. I mean, the presents, the only good news is we got like 8 presents. We got a present like every day for Hanukkah, you know?
Oh, wow, really?
So it was good, you know? And then that kind of faded away. And
I'll give you a present next year, remind
okay.
me.
All right, okay. I'll give you one too. Uh-huh. yesterday, I was actually on my day off. I know you usually hike with the doodle and whatever, but I actually went to the Barrett sale yesterday. And there was one in the entire catalog of like 250.
All right, so let's just lead this up. This is the CTBA, the California Thoroughbred Breeders Association sale held at the Pomona Sales Ground yesterday.
Correct. Yes, it was a mixed sale of yearlings, short yearlings, 2-year-olds and mares. And I went there because there was one filly I was interested in, and that was a Declaration of War filly that I had bought. I just looked at the catalog page. It's all I knew. And so I went there, and I'd known that she was $9,000 weanling and a $5,000 yearling. So I figured this is going to be a mess. I realize it, but I owe it to myself to just look at her and then walk away, saying that I would never buy a horse like that. So I went there with my trainer Leonard Powell, and we looked at her, and we kind of liked her. I mean, I said, okay, I want you to tear her apart because two people have now given up on her: the original breeder who sold her for nothing, and the guy who bought her to pinhook her and took a loss. And I thought, she's a nice filly. A nice filly. She had a good walk. She was good size, nice head, nice eye, looked alert, looked calm. I mean, looked, you know, tracked well. Everything was great. I said, Leonard, do you think we can get this thing for like, I don't know, 20? You know, I mean, I think so. There's nobody here. And so I went that up to bid. I never got a bid. The first bid was $20,000.
Wow.
And then it ended up going for $60,000, O.J. Harrigay. So I think she'll probably end up going up north. But so that was that was the extent of yesterday for me.
She was the sale topper, was she?
She was the sale topper, and it was kind of depressing in a way because there were some nice, I mean, I wasn't really in the market, but there were some nice mares that were in foal, decent horses that had either a pedigree or they themselves could run a little bit, and a lot of them didn't even bring a bid. And that's the problem with California right now is that, and I know because I used to have a stallion in the state back in the 80s, and it's so expensive these days to raise horses in California, which is one of the reasons why our foal crop in California now, the cowbreds are down to less than 2,000. And it's like, it costs you $12,000 to $13,000, sometimes even up to $15,000 a year just to board a mare. And that, it's just a tough gig. And what brought this to mind was I have a filly who's running in a maiden cowbred race on Friday. Her name is Sarah Crew. And if she were to win that race, she would get the purse, half the purse money, or 50-60%, plus a $17,500 bonus for winning, which is great. I mean, that's why it pays to own a Calbert.
Is that a solution, though?
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. I mean, it's great if you win, but the problem is you have to win. If you run second or third, you get nothing. And I would like for the CTBA or for the horsemen to change the rule to spread the wealth a little bit along, you know, around. Maybe 10,000 to the winner, 5,000 to second, maybe 2,000 to third. So those of us who maybe aren't, don't have a filly or a colt or whatever, a cowboy that maybe can win, at least we can pay some bills, you know. Because the idea here, and I can tell you this as an owner, nobody's in this to make money, but we just don't want to get wiped out either. I mean, we can just kind of pay the bills. We're happy. It's a fun. It's a sport. This racing in California needs more owners. We need more horses. We need more inventory. Bigger fields, more money being bet, more revenue. It all kind of adds into it, but I would love to see the powers that be to change that rule. If you want to give away 17.5, and I'm glad you are, to owners, Calbert owners, make it to a point you can, to a point where you can spread it to a first, second, or third. That way, I think more trainers and more owners will run their horses a little bit more often, because they know they'll be able to cover the nut, which is a major reason why we don't have more owners. So anybody listening out there who's got that kind of influence, you got my vote if you want to change the rules.
So on to a serious note, you have a filly running Friday.
Yes.
Her name is?
Sarah Crew.
Sarah Crew, she's where?
She's a Grayson filly, mm-hmm. And she's run four times in Northern California. She's run well up there. But I brought her down here because I wanted to try her on the grass. And this is a maiden cowbred race on the turf. She's trained really, really well. I mean, way better down here than she trained up north. I can't wait to try her on the grass. Unfortunately, I opened the entries, and Simon Callahan and Kaleem Shaw have a $400,000 cowbred by Byrne, who breezed a 9-4 fastest of the Ocala April sale. She's in the race. What is she doing in this race, you know?
She's the cowbred.
I know. So anyway, so that's the one we have to beat. And then there's another one of Baltus, another Grayson, who's trained well for Slam Dunk. So I know they don't give anything away around here. I got to go out and run. So, but I'm optimistic that our filly will run well, and hopefully she will take to the grass, and it's fun. So I'm looking forward to that.
Her name is Sarah Crew, and she'll run on Friday here at the Great Race Place. All right, let's talk Eclipse Awards. The finalists were listed. Were there any surprises, Siegel? I mean, we have some Slam Dunks. We're thinking Bricks and Mortar for Turf Horse, Kefefi, Sprinter, perhaps Kefefi as well for Champion 3-year-old, Philly. What are the tightest categories?
Well, I don't think there were any surprises, but I'm very intrigued by the voting for the Champion 2-year-old male. I'm a big proponent of the Breeders' Cup, and I give that race much more weight than any other 2-year-old race. So if you show up and you win it, I mean, there has to be something extraordinary out there for me to think that the winner shouldn't get the vote. And this year, Storm the Court, who essentially only ran three times. I mean, he had one race in the Del Mar Futurity that he got wiped out at the start and lost the rider. It wasn't his fault. It was just bad luck.
Right.
He was third in another grade one. He won his maiden, and of course, he won the Breeders' Cup. And I definitely, now I don't know whether he's the best 2-year-old out there, or who will be the best 3-year-old out there. But I do definitely think that he should get it. And I know there's a lot of sentiment for Structor in the same division, who was undefeated, but is a grass horse. And I don't really know how you can vote for a grass 2-year-old to be champion 2-year-old over the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner. I don't see it.
I'm 50-50 on this, yeah. Because if you can look at it both ways. If Structor had been 3-for-3 on dirt, he's a Slam Dunk, right? No one's knocking that.
Correct.
He's 3-for-3 on turf, and we're liable to see him on the dirt.
Well, okay.
In the upcoming months. So I think it's going to be a lot tighter than a lot of people think. Now, Maxfield, he's in there.
To be in there for third. He's not going to get any first place votes. But, I mean, my thinking about voting, if there was a Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Eclipse Award division.
Which maybe
fine.
There should be.
Maybe there should be, but there are so few contestants in that division at this time of the year. First of all, you don't even start running grass races until the fall, and most of your two-year-olds aren't running on turf because they're going for the dirt. There's more money there. So I'm not really sure that winning, going 3 for 3 on grass as a two-year-old is that great of an accomplishment. But I do think winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile is. So for me, Storm the Court should be the champion two-year-old male, and I hope he gets it. But in looking at some of the others, we talked about this before, that the horse of the year, the final three, Bricks and Mortar, Maximum Security, and Matoli. I think most people probably are of the opinion that Bricks and Mortars is going to get it. Again, a grass horse beating up on a bunch of horses that aren't that great and doing it in the turf division. I think Maximum Security done enough to win it. So I think that will be close, but I really think Bricks and Mortar will probably win it.
I think he will too. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Maximum Security definitely will get some votes. But everyone that I've actually spoken to has voted Bricks and Mortar. So.
Okay. Well, Maximum Security will get his Eclipse Award in the three-year-old male division. I'm fairly
confident. Does Omaha Beach go home without something?
He does. And if he'd been if he'd remained in training as a four-year-old, he would get something this year because that's how good I think he is. But he is going to the breeding shed instead after his appearance in the Pegasus, and we'll talk about those invitations in a minute. By the way, I want to bring up one other thing, is that for those of you who are not aware, that the Eclipse Award ceremony, the votes announced, the dinner and all that's on the 23rd, and we have a new group of three that will be hosting the Eclipse Awards. Janine Edwards had been doing it for, I think, like 7 years in a row. But Acacia, Courtney, Brittany Urton, and Gabby Gaudette going to be it. I think it's great.
And that's great. And hopefully they'll bring some diversity and have a bit of fun with it. And Janine Edwards, in fairness, has been great over the course of the years. It's not an easy thing to do. It's a long, drawn-out 3-4 hour dinner, and you know, people generally talk over whoever's up on the stage because the wine is flowing.
Let me just say this about let me give these beautiful young ladies, and they are more than deserving. They are three outstanding representatives of the industry. They know their stuff. That's the main thing. They're not up there because they're young and they're attractive. They're there because they know the game. And so, but let me give them one bit of advice, if you don't mind.
Okay, let's have it. Ladies, drum roll, please.
Try not to be funny, because people in the horse racing business have the worst sense of humor I've ever seen. They laugh at nothing. I mean, you can be the funniest person in the world, and they're going to sit there because everybody is so darn thin-skinned and sensitive and angry at the world, and they're not going to laugh. So don't even try to crack a joke, because no one's going to laugh at it, even if it's the funniest joke of all time.
Brittany and Acacia, that is... Right. That is to you and Gabby.
Right.
From
I mean,
Mr.
Eddie
Jeff
Murphy would get no laughs in this thing if he got up there. So just be yourself. Keep the thing moving, you know, and I think you'll be great. You
know? All right, let's move on. Let's talk about the purses up and the mutual handle down in 2019. And this is a big subject to talk about, because there is no doubt, if we look at the purse structure in Kentucky and New York specifically, those purses are going to be astronomical in the coming year, thanks mostly in Kentucky to historical racing and, of course, sports gambling coming in. Right. But what's happening to the handle?
Well, I think the handle was down in 2019, and that's, I think there were a lot of circumstances. I think, obviously, horse racing had a lot of negative publicity last year with the horse deaths that we've had and all that, you know, dominating the news. And I think people took a step back, but it's still a great sport, and hopefully it'll rebound in terms of the pari-mutuel handle. But the purses are up, but they're up maybe not necessarily for the right reasons, you know. I mean, we're getting subsidies through what you mentioned, historical racing, which is basically slots. And that's great for the states that have them. But out here in California, we don't have that, and it's hard for us in California to compete, which is one of the reasons why we see a lot of, not a mass exodus, but we're losing horses to the Oakland Parks of the world and the Kentuckys, because they're, and I don't blame the owners for going there, because that's where the money is, and, you know, you want to be able to at least keep your head above water in this sport, and so there is an issue here, and hopefully if sports betting is going to be and I think it's going to come to California, and I think we're going to get a slice of the pie on that. I think things have a chance maybe of turning around a little bit, maybe not in 2020, but maybe in the years thereafter. So I'm still optimistic that things are going to work out just fine. You can't get a better venue than Santa Anita as far as I'm concerned, and I think that we're going to be just fine. We just have to have a little bit more luck on our side, and I think we're going to get that this year because we are due.
We most certainly are due. Okay, let's move on. Never too early to talk about the Kentucky Derby. What did we learn from last week? Let's lead off with Independence Hall, who was the next coming, according to Mr. Jeffrey Siegel. What say you now?
Well, look, I've had this happen to me before, where you have a, you win a race and you're depressed because, no, I mean, I'll give you a quick story. Back in the 80s, there was a no double colt named Double Shang that ran a couple of times out here. Vernon Winchell was the owner breeder. And he sprinted, he had two sprints, and he was like spectacular. He didn't win, but he looked like a colt that would stretch out. The no doubles back in the day would run all day. And this, I said, this is going to be my Derby horse. So I ended up buying half, 50% interest with Mr. Winchell in the horse. Bought into him. He kept the horse. And so we stretched him out, and we ran him long. And I said, this is going to be my Derby horse. And he's going to win, and I'm gonna have a great winner. So he goes out there and he wins. He wins, like he's supposed to win. And I'm walking in the winner's circle, and my father, who was with me, and he says, that was great. I said, not really. he says, why are you depressed? I said, because I just brought a horse that I don't think can run. I said, what are you talking about? He just won. I said, I know he won, but he didn't win like he was supposed to. He was life and death. He was crawling the last eighth of a mile. I said, I want a race, and I don't have a Derby horse. Well, it turns out I didn't even have a sprinter because I backed him up the sprint, and he couldn't even do that. So there's a situation where you win a race. What's the old Rosie Perez line in White Man Can't Jump? Sometimes you lose when you really win. Well, I lost when I really win, and I'm wondering if the same doesn't apply to the Eclipse Thoroughbred and his Thoroughbreds and the partners, because Independence Hall, he won the race, but as far as I'm concerned, he lost. Can you extrapolate on that?
101 by a speed figure taking down the Nashua. In the Jerome, he dropped down to an 83. When he broke his maiden, he had an 82. It was a workman-like performance.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't any good. I don't care how you want to do it.
It was a workman. He won. He won by four, Siegel. It was workman-like.
Look, this horse was supposed to be the next...
According to you.
I understand, but I'm taking it from my perspective. Okay. In the second race of his life, he earns a triple-digit buyer. He wins the stakes by 12 lengths. I said last week, or a week before, that it reminded me of Seattle Slough, because Seattle Slough won the Champagne the same way. He came out of nowhere, and he won this one-turn mile in New York, and he won by 10 or 12, and he ran a mile in 34 and won. And the only difference is he went on and justified that impression. But after watching Independence Hall win, and a colt that I was obviously sky-high on, He doesn't behave himself in the paddock. He doesn't break in the race. Both things that he'd done before. And then he gets a little keen. He grabs the hole of the bed. He rushes up. And then he's kind of straight as a string to win the race against horses that are not considered to be that good. The buyer number drops 19 points. You're not supposed to drop 19 points. You're supposed to move forward, not backwards. So now he's back to square one. Now he's in a... You got to prove to me that you're any good. And I don't know if he is. What do you think? Would you be as high on him?
I just told you. Yeah. It was a workman-like performance.
But you don't want workman-like.
But I wasn't ready to jump off the Empire State Building saying how wonderful he was to begin with. I thought he was a good horse.
Yeah.
This is a problem with being so high on horses, and I admire your passion, Mr. Siegel, but I wasn't sky high on him
Fair
to begin
enough.
With.
Okay,
so
but
I wasn't disappointed.
You weren't.
It was a workmanlike performance, and I will leave my reservations for his next start.
Okay. Fair enough. But that's what I'm saying is I didn't expect him to go out and win by 20, but I didn't expect him to beat a very moderate field, life and death. So he disappointed me. On the other hand,
do we have a new horse to throw the baton to?
We do.
Okay, good, because we need one every week.
We do.
All right.
Okay. I know he was goofy and running sideways and running backwards and doing everything you could possibly do wrong. But I think Authentic has got a world of talent, more so than I thought after his maiden win. See, here's the opposite. When he broke his maiden first time out spinning, it was nice. It was okay.
Workmanlike,
you know. Okay, fair enough. And then he goes out there and he does everything wrong in the Sham Stakes, but he wins like a colt, that there's so much there that I'm jumping on his bandwagon. But I got to ask you, Zoe, because this is a colt that won this race. And he won it by almost 8 lengths. He ran a 1:37.2, which doesn't sound fast, but on that track it was. He ran a buyer number of 90, which was a step up for him. But he was looking around. What in the world was he doing from the eighth pole to the wire?
He's got a world of talent. He, honestly, in the afternoons as opposed to the morning, you're going to get shadows that run across the racetrack.
Right.
So there are shadows on the racetrack, whether he saw the shadows. I'm not going to say there was a massive crowd here at Santa Anita, but there was enough because Bob had stopped actually looking at Authentic. He was looking for the runner-up, his other horse, Azul Coast.
Who ran second,
but then he heard the crowd go, ooh, when he ducked out. So maybe it was noise.
Yeah.
Maybe it was seeing people in the grandstand for the first time. I don't know.
Well,
but there's definitely a raw talent there.
This is
a gazelle-like horse. He's not an atypical Bob Baffert, bulky, sturdy,
tall,
two-year-old
lengthy,
like.
Scopy.
Although he's by Into Mischief out of a Mr. Greeley mare, Flawless, and I pulled up his pedigree, and there's an awful lot of sprint in the pedigree. It goes back to American Gal, Under the Second Dam, American Story, Ronaldo the Wizard, Holiday Runner. There's a lot of sprint in there, but he looks like a two-turn colt. And I asked Bob about him this morning, and he said he's 16'2", mm-hmm. and he weighs 1,100 pounds.
So there's a lot there, more than he looks like, yeah.
Tall and leggy. He goes, right. He kind of looks like Melania. Melania Trump. Well, she kind of looked like him coming down the lane.
Tall and leggy.
Like running all over the place.
All right.
So he's very high on Authentic, and it looks like they're going to put all kinds of equipment on him, earplugs and blinkers, right, for his next start, just to try and get him to go on a straight
line.
Well,
the thing is, there was some crowd noise, but it only happened after he started pulling his ankles.
Yeah, but then he did it again.
He did it again.
So maybe it was the next time.
I don't know. Maybe he's just green and goofy.
He was way ahead. He was looking for his friends, the herd animals.
I really think, by the way, I looked up his pedigree as you did. Do you know what, he is really a credit to Into Mischief, because the mares had a couple of other runners, and they were both bottom rung claiming horses.
Expectations, three wins at 4, and Gitgo, who is now in Panama. The second dam has 2 foals to race, really fancy. And then you go to Holiday Runner, who had Ronaldo the Wizard, 7th Street. And then you've got that whole American Gal family in there as well.
Bottom line, though, is that he looks like a quality horse. And if he can just put his head down and run straight next time, we might see a show. So right now, if you ask me to pick one or the other, sorry, I'm jumping off the bandwagon and joining the Authentic bandwagon. That's the one that I like right now. And Bob Baffert will do right for him. I think maybe you'll see blinkers on him. He's only had the 2 starts, but he's going in the right direction. And if he can just get his act together, I'm not sure what we'll be seeing, but it might be something very special. Now, the other 3-year-old race we had last week was a race called the Mucho Macho Man Stakes, $100,000 one-turn mile. It was won by the Florida bred Chancet, who won the race by a head over As Seen on TV. These two well clear of everybody else. The grass horse, Sol Volante, was 3rd. I was actually surprised, Zoe, to learn that Chancet was assigned a 94 buyer number, 4 points better than Authentic. And while I really admire Chancet, he showed a lot of grit and win, and he's done some good work last fall against Florida breds. There's no way in the world that Chancet is 4 points better than Authentic. I'm sorry. I don't care what the numbers say. But it'll be interesting to see what Chancet does as he advances and takes on tougher company. I don't know whether the Fountain of Youth would be next. I imagine that would be the initial goal, and we'll see how that works out. Getting back to Storm the Court, though, it looks like he might show up in the San Vicente. Or not?
Maybe the Lewis, I think.
Okay.
I think originally San Vicente, and now they're feeling it's a little bit too close.
Okay.
So probably the Bob Lewis for the next start for Storm the Court. But things can change. I will say one thing. He's looked pretty darn good here at Santa Anita.
He worked 5/8 and 1/01 and 3 last week under Flavian Pratt. I thought he looked great. Happy, sharp, eager.
Put on weight.
Yeah. I mean, he hadn't, he's not cranked up or anything, but... he's going to be a force this year. I don't, again, if he wouldn't be my, he's my number one pick to win an Eclipse Award. He's not my number one pick to win the Derby, but it'll be interesting to see how he continues to develop. So there are exciting things going around here in the three-door division, because I mentioned it's kind of wide open, really. I mean, nobody, there's no monster out there yet. There are potential monsters, but...
I think we're going to see over the course of the next few months and probably the next few years the old adage that less is more. And nobody's really cranking their two-year-olds because you don't have to anymore. All you've got to do is win one prep and you're in.
You're right.
And that if you try and run in every prep, the chances are you're going to get hurt along the way and you're going to miss the big dance at the end. Yeah. So less dances for one big one.
That's true. By the way, I want to bring one more thing up, and that is the win on Sunday in the Santa Ynez by Bast. Now, this is a daughter of Uncle Mo. She is now, she's a three-time grade one winner. This was a grade two. You would think on pure resume, people would be over the top with her, but they're not, because she never really runs fast and she never wins like a filly that is going to go on and crush the opposition. As a matter of fact, at the quarter pole, I didn't even think she was going to win. She was under the whip at the top of the stretch just because it looked like Auberge and Golden Principle, her stablemates, were leaving her. And yet she was relentless in the final 16th of a mile. I'll give her credit for that. But what is your impressions of Bast? I mean, she... On paper, she looks great.
Hey, you've got to hand it to her. Mm-hmm. You have to hand it to her. You want to talk about a filly who's danced every dance. She's now made 852,000. She looked horrible. I'm not going to lie. She looked like she was going to lie down at the 3/8 pole. Drayden Van Dyke started riding her at the 3/8 pole. You've got Flavien Prat aboard Auberge, who, by the way, may have run the best of all of them after missing the break.
There's no doubt about
rushing
it.
Rushing up.
No question about that.
And going head and head and not having that quite finished. But Bast looked horrible at the 3/8 pole. She is a testament to Bob Baffert and to herself. She tries. She's gutsy. She dances every dance. She can run short. She can run long. She can do it all, but just don't expect her to look pretty doing it. It's the same thing in the morning with her.
Yeah,
she's
that's
a beautiful-looking filly. I saw her Dam Lafina at the sale, and she's beautiful. I think she's about as honest a racehorse as you could get, whether she's running in grade one company or whether you had a horse that ran for 5,000. It's the honesty that wins this race, and I'm not sure you're going to find as honest a three-year-old filly as Bast.
Okay, well, that's a kind of like a backhanded compliment, calling her honest.
She is honest as long as she is talented.
Okay.
But she's just not anyone, she's not that pretty to watch.
No, she's not. I will say this, and Bast will probably beat Auberge again next time, but based on this race, if Auberge draws the outside post and breaks, this race is over.
Absolutely. So, but they're going to go two different directions. Auberge is probably going to stay round one turn, the test probably being her long-term goal.
Okay, fair enough.
So two different fillies.
Okay, and by the way, Golden Principle, I think she's going to be fine. I hadn't realized that she'd gotten sick after her last race, and I think she was in there and ran well. She just was not quite tight enough to go 7/8, but she'll be fine as well. All right. Zoe, last week the invitations were announced for the Pegasus World Cup and the Pegasus World Cup Turf. And I see the invitation. One of the horses that was invited, Maximum Security, Gift Box also. Now, Maximum Security is supposedly not going to run. He's going to run in the Saudi Arabia Cup.
He is, McKenzie. But who knows? But things are going on out there.
Let me tell you something.
Plans can change.
Let me tell you something. What's going on in the Middle East?
It's not
good. I'm not sure I would want to be going. I know I wouldn't go if I had my horse. I'm not sure I want my horse to go in. I mean, I don't want to get political here, but when there are threats to bomb Dubai, did you hear about that yesterday?
Yes.
I mean, that's not. I mean, I don't think that would ever happen, but. Who the heck needs to be in the Middle East this year with a racehorse? I mean, why not stay here and just enjoy the sport for what it is? I mean, we've got great racing here. I would love to see Maximum Security. I mean, it's not going to happen, I know, but...
Never say never.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Gift Box is going to stay here and run in the big cap. McKenzie's supposed to go to Saudi Arabia. I don't find that fun.
But there's a lot of horses invited for the turf race as well. Yeah. There's invitations. Next Shares being one of them for Richard Baltus. He'll be fine with no Lasix, according to Baltus.
Okay, well, that's fine. We'll see. It'll be good racing, you know. But I wonder if this Saudi Arabia race is going to stay, is going to be a yearly thing. I imagine it would be. Whether or not that puts this particular race of these pair of races in a little bit of jeopardy because, I mean, if you got, I mean, we've have the, arguably the two best horses in the States aren't going to be running in it. That should never happen. Well, you got a race as good as this, the Pegasus World Cup, and you got Maximum Security and McKenzie not going to be in there. It does, almost kind of defeats the purpose of the race. So.
Well, I'm sure we'll find out soon enough, but McKenzie, as of now, still training up to the Saudi World Cup. Yeah. He worked this morning here at Santa Anita, 1:04 straight in Van Dijk up aboard him. He looks, for McKenzie, who can sometimes look a little bit light in the flesh, he looks great right now.
Right.
He really, really does. He's a horse who thrives with plenty of time between starts.
Okay, well, that race comes out. Those races will come at the end of the month at Gulfstream Park, and it'll be a good race, good gambling, good card, good everything. I just wish that our best horses would support it because I know if I had one, that's where he'd be.
Absolutely. All right, let's look forward to this weekend at Santa Anita. We do have some graded stakes, the La Cañada, a grade 3 event, and the Las Ciénagas, a grade 3 on Saturday. What are we looking forward to
there? Entries will be drawn today, so we'll find out soon enough who's going to be in those races. A kind of a light week in terms of racing here. But only 3 days of racing this week. We got Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which I kind of like because I think that, you know, with the inventory that we have here in Southern California, I don't know whether or not we can put four really good programs together every week. We can put three of them, I know that, and certainly over the weekend. So, entries will be drawn today for that. Turning back one other point I wanted to make before we sign off, and that is Justify had her first foal the other day, a filly. American Pharoah. Number one freshman stallion, obviously did extremely well along with Constitution. But Justify, I read with some interest about his first foal being born, and I was curious how do you think breeders how will he be accepted in the sales ring? What do you think his future is?
Oh, fantastic! Mm-hmm. I mean, no doubt about it. American Pharoah's babies were all kinds of different sizes.
Right.
I mean, basically you got pretty much everything. Whatever kind of mare you bred to American Pharoah is the type of horse that you got out. Like, a lot of his progeny tend to throw to the dam.
Okay.
Justify, I don't know. I haven't seen any.
Well, nobody has, just the one.
So,
but let me ask you this, though. As good as American Pharoah did in his first crop, almost all of his good horses were grass horses. And North American breeders, they'll run horses on the grass if they prove that their foals or their yearlings or 2-year-olds, whatever, aren't going to be acting on the dirt. People aren't breeding the American Pharoah to get a good grass horse. They want to get a 3-year-old, a Derby horse, a Triple Crown type horse like he was. And I'm a little concerned, although it's better than nothing, but I want to see him come up with a good dirt horse. And I don't know if we've seen that yet. What are your impressions
of that? There are plenty out there. I think I like the diversity of American Pharoah. I'm not sure what we're going to see from Justify. I'm going to expect to see a big, blocky dirt horse from Justify because that's what he looked like.
Right.
American Pharoah was a bit more scopier, perhaps a little bit, not feminine, but just longer, old school, like those old pictures you see of racehorses.
Sure.
That's American Pharoah. That is what he looks like to me.
I'd like for him to come up with a good dirt horse, at least one.
We'll see. The year is young.
Well, it is, but it is young. It is young.
It is young. He's got 3-year-olds. There's plenty of time.
Exactly. What is it? 32 weeks old.
Yeah, so it's plenty of time. All right, that was Jeff Siegel. We talked about anything from Christmas trees to Rosie Perez to Justify and anything else. He's a man who can talk about just about anything.
I'm diversified.
Very diversified. For Jeff Siegel, I'm Zoe Cavan. We'll see you next week.